I think back to my days at Southwest, and I'm like, if I went to my manager and I said, this is the scorecard that I think determines success in my role. Here's what I've built out. Here's what I think is going to move the needle. What do you think? Yes or no?
I don't know if you see my face right now, but I'm literally having an orgasm. I'm having like a teammate or like that would be amazing. If you work for me, by the way, like, please make a scorecard yourself and like bring that. That's the, oh my gosh. That's like the most amazing thing. Like, thank God, like Insta promotion track.
You know, they say women shouldn't be bossy.
We're out here reclaiming that word. What's so wrong with being the boss?
Bossy. Welcome back to Bossy. This week we are talking about scorecards. So this is something that we actually mentioned briefly in our, I think it was the scaling from six figures to seven figures episode, but it just feels like such an impactful topic. We didn't really spend that much time on it. So we were thinking we could go through scorecards today, scorecard building, how do you build an effective one? I think that's what we're going to do today.
This is one of those topics where you might think it's boring. It's one of those topics most people think are boring and I think is exciting.
Yeah, I think it's extremely exciting.
Yeah, because like, how do you know that you're doing the right things or that you're on progress? And then particularly like, then as you start kind of bringing more people on board to help you, how do you make sure they understand that they're on track with your vision? So today we're going to talk about like how building, you can build scorecards that actually move the needle in your business, how to get your team excited about making the scorecard and then continuing to maintain it so it's not all you doing it, and also just identifying like what metrics should I be tracking for my idea, for my business to push it forward.
Right. And that's actually something that I want your advice on today for my business, because I think the concept of a scorecard is very valuable. It's important, but if you're not tracking the right things, the entire utility of it kind of goes away. So for the audience, the business model that we have at Money with Katie is more of a, what I'll call a volume play. So think, you know, big audience trying to move a lot of product that has a low price point and also trying to get high value advertisers, which kind of relies on having a big audience if you want to be able to sign big advertisers.
Yeah.
And so it's been growing over 3 years, but I think now we're in that place where I'm trying to figure out what is actually effective for us to be tracking and looking at? Where should we be focusing our time in order to make sure that we're continuing to grow the right things and we're not just kind of like, oh, well, we've always done it this way, so we're just going to keep doing it this way. So,
and just for context, so people understand kind of the structure of your business, it's content driven, right? So there's blog posts, there's social posts, and there's the podcast. What, right. Am I missing anything?
The newsletter.
And the newsletter. Okay. Yeah. And the newsletter.
Yeah.
And there's placement where you sell ads. You also have your planner. So like people who listen to you who want like deep dive tools on what you talk about, they can also purchase those, but like maybe split between products for people to have and advertiser products.
Exactly. And it's kind of, I don't want to say it's totally half and half right now, because that's not true. It's probably more like 60-70% advertising revenue and then like 30-40% direct to consumer revenue, where we're selling things to our customers. So it's an interesting kind of mix, but I would say it's, in that sense, it's like your pretty traditional media model approach, where you have some sponsorship advertising and then you also have, I guess, what we would have the equivalent of like subscription revenue as like a newspaper, but ours is like you're buying a tool every year.
Yeah.
So I built a scorecard after that 6 to 7 figure episode, because I was like, this is a really good idea. I like love the idea of having something that you're tracking consistently, that everyone's kind of aligned on what success looks like. It just made sense to me. So I built a scorecard, but I actually think it's like way too much, because I kind of made it too much. And I think I was making that cardinal, like breaking that cardinal rule of like, no, you can't track everything. Not everything can be a priority, because if everything is a priority, then nothing's a priority.
Then nothing's a priority. Yeah.
So
particularly if you're a small team, like you can only
two people.
Okay. Yeah. Right. So like you can only make sense of, I actually find that like when I have too many metrics that I'm tracking, nothing makes sense.
Okay,
like things start to get confusing.
That.
We start to get in circular conversations, and you create this effect where like, okay, if you have two people on your team and you're pulling like in different directions, maybe you're like, maybe it's not like opposite directions, but you're like, you know, both going diagonal, right? It's hard to like move a thing that way. Whereas if you're both moving in the same direction, right? Like just you move and flow faster. There's two people pulling or how many people you have on your team pulling. And so like, I just find that things start to get like confusing, wiggly. Like what are we working on? People don't really know when there's a bunch of metrics.
Yeah. And I think what I was struggling with as I was making it, which is why actually sitting down and like, you might think you know what you're tracking, but then it's interesting the way that once you actually go to try to put it down on paper and like, enumerate the things that matter. It's like, oh, actually, I'm not sure what the right thing to track is because I realized that the sticking point for me was, should I track the progress toward goals or should I be tracking the metrics that I hypothesize tell me that we're going to hit the goal? So, for example, that sounds like a nuanced difference, but a goal might be we want to sell out all of our podcast and newsletter inventory that we have. We'll call it, making this up, 60 placements in the first half of the year, and we want to make sure all of them sell. So is the best thing to be tracking every week how many placements have sold, or is the best thing to track, you know, outreach to clients, or how many pitches do we have out in the market right now? What's our close rate? Like those things are probably going to be more indicative of whether or not we're going to hit that goal than just tracking the surface level goal. So I wanted your thoughts on that and how you think about that, because it kind of came up over and over again of like, well, we have a goal to hit a certain number of newsletter subscribers, but just tracking subscribers isn't really telling us very much, because what actually drives the ball forward there is like, are we doing newsletter swaps? Are we getting plugged in other places? Are we pitching ourselves to be plugged in other places? How much promotion are we doing? Those things feel like the needle movers to drive the goal forward. But then I started getting into the weeds of like, okay, so should I be tracking all six of the things that I think are going to do that? Or it's like, it's easy to get kind of caught up in like, to not know where to direct your focus.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I think what I have done with my own team, because we're probably like a year in actually from doing a lot of scorecarding and a lot of tracking. And I actually am a little bit embarrassed by that. Like prior to a year ago, we didn't do consistent quarterly planning and we didn't do like really like clear, like here, it is your job to drive a metric. And now at least for my leadership team, like if someone's maybe more junior, because we have like not a bunch of layers, but like a layer below me and a layer under that. So like, I guess three layers. Mm-hmm. Now, here's how I process this. So first I gave people metrics because I didn't really feel like we were senior enough and experienced enough, my team, in creating metrics that mattered for them to like come up with exactly what they needed. So I gave people like a main metric. So for example, you're responsible for revenue, you're responsible for customer happiness.
Okay.
Right. Then they each, so, and those are kind of like the two sides of my business and the two leaders that I have mainly in place. Right. So that's how I break it up, like growth and like fulfillment. Mm-hmm. So then I had them pick two main metrics underneath the one that they have that leads to that. So this goes to what you're saying about like, there's the sales metric, but then there's like activity that we do towards the sales. Mm-hmm. We reach out to leads, we have phone calls. And so those are the things that are like the driving metrics underneath that. So if you look at the scorecard, for example, for Apps Without Code, there are two sections. This is like the executive scorecard.
Executive scorecard.
Yeah.
Okay. Two sections.
Like AWC executive scorecard. At the top, there's three metrics in the first section, three metrics in the bottom section. Each person owns their section.
Okay. Right? One person owns three.
One person owns three metrics, but really they're owning one metric and then they're mapping out the two metrics like below it that drive that. So for example, revenue is the one main metric for someone. And then there's like sales close rate or like and cash collected per lead are the ones that they selected underneath that tell us this.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Tell us if we're getting close. And the way I think about a scorecard too is like, if I were to leave the company to go on vacation for 2 months, and all I had the ability to do was to look at this spreadsheet to see how things are doing.
I need to know,
is things in green, I can stay on vacation. They're yellow, I might need to start looking at booking flights. Or red, get a flight back home immediately.
And when you say green, yellow, red, are you guys actually basically color coding to indicate whether or not something is on track. Like, there's that level of kind of, okay, we have established these thresholds where if it's in this range, things are good. If it's in this middle range, now we're feeling nervous about it. And if it's here, something is wrong and this requires urgent attention. Like, that has been predetermined.
100%. So there are, if you look at our actual scorecarding document, it has three tabs. If you're watching on video, people will be able to see this. So the first tab is the rubric tab. And so we have the three metrics, or you could put whatever metrics you're tracking here. So, like, for example, for my VP of growth, it's like revenue, sales close rate, cash collected per lead. For my head of operations, it's net promoter score, customer apps launched, refund rate.
Got it. Right?
So those are the metrics that you write in, like the name of the metric. And then there's like poor, on track, exceeding, good, better, best, however you want to think about it. And we actually say, if the NPS is this number or below, we consider that to be poor. And if it is between these two numbers, then we consider that to be on track. And if it is this number or above, we consider that to be exceeding. So in advance, we make definitions of it. And we don't get super lost in the sauce about, well, we now have to go find the customer survey report to see the industry standards of exactly, like, we're not really getting lost in the sauce about this. I actually let my team set the numbers they think. If they need to, like, change it for the next quarter, they can. That's okay.
Okay, so this is something that you, and it sounds like you used to tell them, you used to dictate these things. Now you're saying, you tell me what is poor, what is on track, what is exceeding expectations.
Yeah, so what I did was I gave them the metric. I actually wrote, when I rolled this out, I wrote a little brief, a little like document, Amazon, CEO of Amazon, Jeff Bezos style, and was saying, I am now introducing a brand new thing. Mm-hmm. I now want you to think about your role through the lens of a metric. The reason I want to do this is because I want to pull back and not be on your ass about so much stuff. I just want you to know that this is the thing I want you to drive, and you get creatively beautiful about how you want to craft this. So this is the brand new thing that I'm instituting, and I kind of like made it this whole ceremony thing about shifting gears, that your job is to drive this metric, and your next immediate step is to tell me the two main metrics you need to track that tell us if we're getting close to that. Because like sometimes revenue, like it may take a while to hit the revenue number, but you kind of need to know, like, are we getting close? Are we doing enough pitches, et cetera?
Okay, that makes sense. Well, since we've started doing this, and again, I do think that ours is like way too much because we have four sections. So I'll walk you through them.
Please.
The first pertains to revenue growth. So it's specific to advertising revenue.
Yeah.
So it's like sell out all the inventory effectively is the overarching goal. And then there are little goals within that that kind of ladder up to that. And then there are goals around wealth planner sales that are, we want to sell an average of this many per quarter.
Yeah.
And then these are the various ways that we think we're going to do that.
Okay.
And so we're going to track whether or not we are actually controlling the processes or the pieces that we can control. Are we putting in the right inputs that we hypothesize will generate this output? And how are we tracking toward those metrics? Then there's overall audience growth goals that are like, we want to grow this much this year and make sure that we see per quarter, you know, these various channels growing by pretty modest amounts, but just to indicate that there's traction.
Yeah.
And then one thing that I thought was kind of fun that I added as the fourth thing is like an R&D section. So we kind of call it the wild card, where it's like, we want to make sure that every quarter we are trying something new. So whether that's experimenting on a new platform, or it's like trying a different kind of custom sponsorship, or it's we're going to try a cohort-based workshop that lasts a couple weeks and see what people think. Because I think where I was nervous was like, we're so lost in the sauce of the day-to-day of trying to make sure that the current thing is moving forward, that we're not really looking at the horizon to be like, but what else is out there? What else could or should we be doing that maybe by running these little experiments every quarter, we can then say, oh, we thought that advertising revenue was the biggest piece of this, but actually we're seeing so much traction in this Q2 experiment that like we now have a new hypothesis that actually, we should be doing conferences. Like, people want to go to conferences, and that could be a huge moneymaker. And actually, we could get sponsors for those. So it's helping us think bigger. But I do think that after I laid it all out, I was like, I do feel like for my sake and for my producer's sake, and for whoever else joins our team, we need to prioritize and delineate specifically what level of time these things should be receiving. So like advertising, you know, advertising or audience related things that drive that biggest component of revenue need to be getting 50 to 60% of our attention. Yeah. This isn't like a 25, 25, 25, you know, quarterly split between them. It's that some of these things actually are top priority. And if we're not hitting those marks, then we're not even thinking about wildcard R&D. Like that stuff is if these other things are tracking properly.
So if you had to rank those four, it sounds like the first metric that you said around advertising revenue, that's your number one metric.
And then wealth planner sales.
Great.
And then audience growth.
Okay.
And then R&D.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. So now actually we have three metrics and one project.
Interesting. So wait, say more about that.
Because I think there's a distinction between a project goal and a metric on a scorecard.
Interesting.
You can still track progress of projects, though.
Okay.
But the R&D, it doesn't sound like there's a number you're trying to hit for the R&D.
Yeah, it's really just like, are we running one experiment per quarter?
Which is smart. I love that. The way that I structure my scorecard, so I was saying there's like three tabs. So the first tab is the rubric tab. The second tab is the numbers tab. And that kind of is like your first three metrics. So I think we can show up on the screen if you're watching on YouTube or Spotify, or you can come over there so you can see the visual. Because the second metric is where I think your first three metrics should go. So you would put your first three metrics, metric one, metric two, metric three. I actually think for the exec scorecard, you should, and that's exec is you, you don't need on this view of the scorecard the leading indicators of it. And if you do, put them in the little collapsible folders. You know what I'm talking about, where you can like, what's that called? Where you can like,
you can like hide the rows.
You can like hide the row essentially. So they're hidden ones that kind of roll up, and then you have each month. And then going back to what we were talking about with the color coding, then because you have the rubric and you decided what the colors mean, right? What each of the numbers are, it should be in colors. So what I do is like, we have meetings and we say, okay, let's open up the scorecard, and I can see like, okay, in June we're green. Across the board, looking good. May, I know exactly where the problem is in the business.
This is so much simpler, and I can see how powerful it would be, because you're not then trying to make sense of a bunch of different inputs. It's like, yeah, you clearly can see in this example that metric one is, that's an issue.
And then, yeah, exactly. In May, metric one is the issue. Yeah. And then I go, okay, I need to go schedule a sit down with my leader who's responsible for metric one.
Yeah.
Because I need to like give them more resources. We need to come up with a different plan, or like something's going on. And also I can see in the scorecard, this is not the first month where metric one's been in trouble. We're consistently metric one 2 months in a row, April and May, having some problems, right? So that's how I look at this. But then going back to what you were saying about projects, let's put up on the screen the last tab of the scorecard structure that I have, because that's for projects.
Okay.
So what I do is I have all of my leaders commit to one or two projects that they want to work on this quarter. And we do quarterly planning at the beginning. And so they determine their project. So in the first column, they put like the name of the project. Like, we're going to do this particular type of R&D project, right? Mm-hmm. Exactly what the project is. And then it says the next column is like, who owns that? Okay. Right? The name of the person who owns it. There can't be multiple. There has to be one core owner. And then I'm going to skip to the last column. There's like a lines about the project on track milestones. So this is the hardest part for my team.
Yeah.
And we war room this out at the beginning or at the end of the quarter for the next quarter. And they're getting, every time we do it, they get better at this. But it was hard to begin with, because they have to mark out. So 25% is when we have published this many campaigns and they include these things. 50% is when we've gotten this number of responses to the like literal exacts of like quantifiable what happens at 25% complete, 50, 75, and 100. Now, what would happen when we started this was like my team and I were not really that good at doing these. So we would put ourselves into these scenarios where we're like, dang, I now realize halfway through the quarter that the way I wrote these percentages, it was not possible to get to 100% until the last day of the quarter. Or like, it wasn't possible to like, if I didn't complete 50% one, that means that the whole project's not done, but like I wrote it wrong in a way that's kind of confusing.
Yeah.
So we were writing them poorly. And so each quarter we get better, and I kind of leave it, but we have like an aha moment of like, I guess we learned something about how we should write these. And then we can see a number in that third column of like how on track the project is. So I can quickly go in and be like, all right, most of our projects were 50% complete. We're halfway through the quarter. That's good. This one is 0% complete still, mm-hmm. and we're 50% of the quarter. Let me go schedule a meeting with the team about how we're going to get more progress on that. So I, as a leader, know like, where do I need to push?
It also seems like it eliminates any sort of differences of opinion that could become really problematic later. Ooh. Of like, well, I think it's on track. Well, I don't. Or like, well, I think this has been successful. It's like, well, you know, if the expectations are laid out this clearly, then there are no surprises later.
Yeah.
If something isn't going well, everyone can see it's not going well because everybody agreed ahead of time on what going well looks like.
At the beginning of doing this, to your point, we got into some, like, I don't want to say like arguments, but like debates about this because we weren't used to doing it. And so someone would be like working on a project and be like, but I feel like it's we're making progress. And like, I don't like that I'm being like evaluated on like I'm only at 25% because I feel like it's going well. And it's like, I get that you feel that way, but like either we need to next quarter write the milestones differently, or we just need to be like not interfering. We are not on track. Project ain't on track.
Yeah. The feelings are not an accurate representation of how this is progressing.
But it made me realize how much like prior to instituting this, how much we were just going off of like, it feels like it's on track. Feel pretty good.
Yeah, that's, I do. It's like a vibes-based business plan.
I had to change the culture.
Yeah, that's kind of how we roll, I think, is vibes.
Yeah.
A lot of the time.
Yeah, and I don't like, I like a good vibe, so I'm not opposed to like vibes-based business, but I don't play about the scorecard and the scorecard meeting structure, because what we do is we have like every Thursday morning, we have like the leadership team meeting, and I, by the way, I have to create the ritual around the scorecard. Otherwise, we'll create the scorecard and no one will do it.
Yeah, so you're meeting every week. We also started doing that after you and I had talked about it. We were like, let's just experiment with this and like see how it goes. And we do it on Mondays because then it kind of feels like a good way to start the week to be like, okay, we think or we thought that this was our to-do list this week. Mm. But now that we're looking at these metrics, does that prioritization still make sense?
Yeah.
Like how we're tracking, do we actually have a good game plan for this week? Or is this a little bit like, were we doing a vibes-based, feels-based prioritization?
That's a really good one. I have had a meeting with a teammate of mine, and I was like, what are you working on this week? And she pulls up her, we use like Asana to like show what you're working on. She pulls up her Asana, and she's telling me about what she's working on, like all the things that are exciting. I'm like, okay, let's just do a quick little activity. Pull up the Asana and put right next to it the scorecard. Let's look at the stuff you're responsible for. And I want you to type the number of the priority project, like the project one, project two, next to the task for this week. And I want to see how it maps. Mm-hmm. And so she goes through, she's like, okay, well, this is the first thing we're going to, okay, I guess that doesn't map to a priority project. Okay, well, this is the second thing. I guess that also doesn't map to a priority project.
Oh, boy.
Like, almost nothing mapped to a priority project. And I was like, okay, like, by the time we got through it, and I kind of like made it a, like a dramatic thing, but like the point was driven home.
Yeah.
And this is like, these are all kinds of things about like people management that I just didn't know how to do before. It's really just asking, like setting a framework and then just like asking dumb questions. Like, what's the percentage of things you're working on that map to a project? Just like, go ahead, I'll take a second, just grab a number, get a, you know, calculate it real quick for me. Oh, it's 2%? Okay.
I kind of want to try this for Bossy, just to see like if we can in real time war room this out and go, okay, we have this podcast, we have this hypothesis about this podcast, what should we be tracking now?
Yes,
my gut instinct is that in some ways the Money with Katie playbook works a little bit here.
Okay.
And actually it's yours too. It's the you want to measure revenue growth and I would assume audience growth, and that those are the two main.
This concept of like of revenue and like some element of like, are customers happy? Which if you have a content business, it's like, are they?
That's a good learning.
Like maybe it's like engagement or like something like, is the quality good?
Yes.
Right. Whatever that is for your own version of your business.
Which sounds like stupidly simple of like, is it making money? And do your customers like what you're giving them?
That's it.
But it's like, you don't have to overcomplicate it beyond that.
That
does make a lot of sense. We'll be right back to the conversation after a quick break. Okay. Back to the show. So if we're talking revenue,
okay,
immediately I go, okay, well, now I'm not even sure where to focus because my instinct is to go inventory sold, is inventory selling. But that feels, I don't know, maybe too obvious. I'm like, are there other things that we should be thinking about beyond inventory for a podcast? Or is that the right inclination?
No, I think it should be like, okay, if we're making one for Bossy, I think our first metric should be revenue.
Okay.
And I think that feels wiggly and scary for us to do because we have a structure with this show where there's like a team of people involved and we're like, other people help sell the show.
Right.
It should still be on there. Why? Because if it's consistently low, then you and I need to have a meeting and be like, well, something's off. We need to go help whatever it is on the sales team, have a meeting with them. Like, we need to go get proactive as the leaders of the organization for that then, right?
Yes.
So it should still be on there, even if you're like, well, somebody else works on that. So,
yeah.
And this is the thing about entrepreneurship, right? Like, when you lead a company, it's you. This number's down, it's you. That number's down, I don't care if somebody else is responsible for it, it's you. You're responsible for all the numbers.
Okay, that's really fascinating because I think there's also there's an application here for the entrepreneurial person who's inside of another organization. This is what a fantastic way to manage up. Like, I think back to my days at Southwest, and I'm like, if I went to my manager and I said, this is the scorecard that I think determines success in my role. Here's what I've built out. Here's what I think is going to move the needle. What do you think? Yes or no? Like, am I on track here or not? And that if I was consistently coming to one-on-ones being like, this ball is being moved forward, this needle is being moved. Like,
I don't know if you see my face right now, but I'm literally having an orgasm. I'm having like a teammate or like that would be amazing. If you work for me, by the way, like, please make a scorecard yourself and like bring that. That's the, oh my gosh, that's like the most amazing thing. Like, thank God, like Insta promotion track.
Because you're like, okay, this person gets it.
They get it.
They know that we have to be tracking what success looks like.
And not only do you get it, but just like on a heartfelt, I can trust you. I can trust you because you're looking out for me. Because you understand now the weight and heaviness I have on my shoulders of trying to make the business work. And you're on my team in a way that's not like, oh, I think like an employee. I'm not worried about it. But you're on my team in a way that is like a proactive entrepreneur thinker. Okay, now let's talk about where you want to go in the company next.
So
now let's talk about how we help you.
That's amazing because I think even if you're still working a full-time job and you are not fully working on your own business yet, it kind of illustrates the way that you can almost practice or rehearse these things within your current situation and get some of those reps under your belt and start using and implementing them right now, regardless of your employment situation.
Remember the episode that we did where we were talking about the like layers of like how you can contribute in the company?
What episode was that? I don't remember which one it was, but it was like the levels 1 through 5.
One through five levels were essentially like a low level is where you go like,
here's the problem.
Here's the problem. And give it to your manager. And a really high level is like, I found a problem. I found a solution. Here's the solution. Or I found multiple solutions. Here's the solution I think we should pick. And don't worry, I'm already working on it.
Yep.
So the closer you can get, if you're doing this scorecard and you want to manage up, right, to your boss and present a scorecard to your boss, or if you are the boss, to yourself.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The best thing to do is to like a low level version of this. Can we put right back on the screen one more time the scorecard? Because the rubric. Because I think a low level way to do this would be, I think we should do scorecards and leave it. Because now they got to do all the thinking. Like next level would be like, I think we should do scorecards and like, I saw on Bossy there was a template. I made my own template and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
The next level would be, I saw this on Bossy. I think we should do scorecards. I saw it on Bossy. I got a template. And I took a stab at what I think our top three metrics should be.
Okay, so that's where I just came in at. That was number three.
I took a stab at it.
Okay, yep. Stab.
The next level is like, I took a stab at it, and I also took a stab at what poor, on track, and exceeding was. Maybe I did some quick research about what that should be. But I also just put my gut instinct too.
Okay, so that's four.
Can you validate? Because it's much easier, like, just put yourself in like a manager's position, even for yourself. Like, it's much easier to go yes, no.
Mm-hmm.
That one's a little bit off. Yeah, that's about right. Than to think of something anew.
Mm-hmm.
All your own. So you're like, I did half your thinking for you. Just confirm for me this is right. Mm-hmm. Am I off? right? And then I think the like highest level is like I got in the numbers. I've been tracking this a couple for months. I have on your calendar already is a weekly scorecard review meeting.
Ooh.
And we're going to be checking in on that.
Love.
Yep. And I think if we're doing this for Bossy, right, like revenue should be on our scorecard.
Yep.
I think I would do like views would be on our scorecard. And
by views, you mean like downloads of the show?
Downloads. I would do a downloads view combo metric because right now,
YouTube podcast platform,
we're still trying to figure out like, do people like us most on YouTube, on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts? What's the platform? I actually, from an exec scorecard perspective, think the wrong way to do it would be like one line item for every single platform.
Oh, interesting.
I actually don't think that really matters right now. That's not the stage that we're at where we're trying to like dig into this. I think maybe someone, if you have a big team, someone should have a separate drill down scorecard but with all of those information. But from an executive level, I don't really care. I want a rolled up number of like how many people are listening, how many people are slash watching.
Yes.
That's what I want to know. And I want to see how that moves. So we would, if you would put this on a calendar and say we've got a weekly meeting sync, and if you're doing this as the employee or if you're the entrepreneur yourself, right, there's a ritual at the beginning of the meeting. Like on my scorecard meetings, I go, all right, let's open up the scorecard.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's my, we talk small talk a little bit, what's going on, da da. And that's my line. All right, let's pull up the scorecard. And one person on the team knows they're the scorecard sharer. They always pull it up, right? One person shares their screen. So like you create ritual around it. Because if you don't create ritual around it, just people won't do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think what's interesting here is we've kind of targeted these two areas for Bossy, revenue and audience growth. But you mentioned something that alludes to the fact that other team members might have their own, that there's not just one.
Yeah.
That there's one executive scorecard that's the high level for the business, but then other people that are working on it might have versions of this for themselves that are, okay, but if my job is audience growth, then I'm not just tracking on my end overall number of downloads. I have one where I'm tracking Spotify growth, Apple Podcast growth, YouTube growth. Maybe I'm tracking engagement. There are other things.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to dig a little bit deeper there into the process, the functional process of getting those additional scorecards built.
Yeah.
And if it's like, my assumption is that it's you tell me if this is the main metric, what do you need to be tracking now to
you mean
make
like
sure
if somebody else is doing it?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I think you're spot on. Cause I, at least if I think about my own company, my leaders, there's an executive scorecard. That's the one that they mainly make for me so that I can go in and be like, how are we doing?
Yes.
Real quick, colors. Got it. Okay, I see colors. Understand what the colors are. Go. They each have their own scorecard, though. So, like, an example of this, right? Like, my head of growth, he's responsible on the executive scorecard for, like, revenue, cash collected per lead, like, close rate. Those are his three on there. But then, for his own scorecard, he has to think, what are the things that would tell me we are on track for that number on the executive scorecard to be going down? Like the leading indicator that's telling me we're going on the wrong track or would tell me why the number on the executive scorecard is low. An example of this would be on the executive scorecard, revenue is down or like cash collected per lead is down. But he needs to then see each of the sales reps, for example, and see, oh, look, there's one person who's tanking this.
Okay.
And so he's got like a scorecard specifically of like close rate per sales rep, for example, or like for net promoter score, my head of operations, she has a separate scorecard that's like we have two different packages. What's the NPS for each of the packages? And what's the NPS for each of the stages? So we actually use this platform called Mixpanel.
Okay.
So if you want to do this like advanced mode, fancy mode, and I think we can show on the screen here if you're watching us an example of like what a Mixpanel dashboard looks like. Okay. So Mixpanel is like an analytics platform. And so what it does is like instead of going to manually count a thing, all of our metrics just come right into one place. And so there is an exec version of this. And then there's also just like each person has their own view of this. And so essentially like every click, every thing someone does in our universe, the actual activity gets sent to Mixpanel and then it runs reports for that. Okay. Like sales, engagements, clicks, those sorts of things.
And if we're not wanting to be super fancy, if we're just executing the first version of this, I personally have an affinity for spreadsheets because they're just easy to use.
Spreadsheet, 100%. Even when we use Mixpanel, like Mixpanel gives real-time information, so I don't need to like go ask for a scorecard update every time.
Sure.
But we still use a spreadsheet scorecard. So that means that each week, someone's responsible for typing in the number into the cell for that month. So if we're doing January and it's week one, and you put your how much it has been thus far. If it's revenue, we're at this amount of revenue thus far. Okay, then the next week you update the number. You update the number, but you got to get it from somewhere. And so you just get it from somewhere and put it in a spreadsheet.
Yeah, we have a similar program called LightDash that does that, where the analytics team, who is smarter than I am with the numbers, has everything piped into one place, and then we can reference that easily. Okay, so I'm trying to think now how to summarize what we've just learned, because there feels like a lot. But the big key points feel like consistency around the ritual and how you're, you know, checking in at the same time every week, and like everyone is on the same page about what the key metrics are. You're keeping it very narrow for the executive scorecard, where there's what would you say? What's the maximum? Four? Three?
Yeah. Three.
Okay, three.
I think it's three is the maximum. If you have like different departments and you're starting to get bigger, then like you can have like two or three per department. But like really there's one main one per department and one or two leading indicators to that is
and
really what it is.
And then each person who is managing, maybe I am the head of growth. And so if that's my main metric, I then have my own kind of distilled down scorecard that I'm looking at where, to your point, it should answer the why. If something's going really well, it should tell me why. If something's going really poorly, it should tell me why.
Yes.
But it should answer the why.
Yep, exactly. Okay. That's exactly right. That's the framework. That's the playbook.
And then anything else you would add to that, or is it that simple?
I think it's that simple. I think the only thing I would add to this is like, you're going to mess this up when you do it the first go.
Yeah.
The goal is not to get it perfect.
Yeah.
It's to just like get a stab at it. Next quarter, when you do it again, just like have a quick conversation about like, what did we learn about last round? Okay, let's just make that update. What did we learn about last round? Let's just make that update. So know that it is like a growing process and that you're probably going to pick crappy numbers to track at the beginning. You're going to be really excited about vanity metrics that really aren't that important if you're more junior. Like, you're going to get better at it over time. But what is important is that you got something on the scorecard.
Got something.
Yeah.
When we started this and I showed it to my producer, I built out the first draft and I did two things. The first is I had a tab at the beginning that was a brief, so that if you find this file somehow, you stumble across this, whether you are the person that that was intended to see it, or maybe someone else finds it, that there is a brief that tells you this is what our intention is here. And I was very clear that, like, I think I actually wrote the words, we will not get this right at first.
Yeah.
This is attempt number one, and we're going to experiment and see whether or not we feel like these are the right things to track. Because I think sometimes when you haven't yet found the groove of like what you want to be measuring and the various processes for tracking these things, I think sometimes if you as an employee or as a partner or someone else that's, you know, on the receiving end of this.
Yeah.
You might, if you don't have the full context, really understand that, like, it might feel kind of frustrating of like, but I thought you said we were doing it this way and now you want to change it. So it's like, I think it's important to set that expectation in the beginning that, like, you know, this will change.
Yes.
This is a fluid process that will evolve. And so, like, if something about this isn't working, we're going to fix it. This isn't a fixed thing. So I tried to set that expectation. I also recorded a Loom video walking through it to give the whole thought process. And I sent it to her and I was like, hey, this is what I'm thinking. I would love your thoughts. If you want to go in there, add comments. If you want to just send me feedback, like if you want to add the feedback directly in it.
Yeah.
But I think that the socialization piece of like giving the context and really explaining this is why we're trying it this way is important. So it doesn't feel like whiplash of last month you were telling people to track something else.
100%. The socialization of it is everything, because you as the leader have to like create inspiration to do this in the first place. Mm-hmm. And also, people hate scorecarding. It is not fun. This is not like something most people are gonna like just sign themselves up for.
Especially because it kind of reveals where there are problems in a way that's very quantitative. And yes. To your point about vibes, it's like, well, I feel like things are going well.
Yep.
It's like, but you know, it's like it kind of puts you on the spot a little bit.
And I think that's why people don't want to do it at the beginning. And so as a leader, you kind of have to push for this anyway. If you're sort of an entrepreneur, know that the win at the end of this is where, actually, entrepreneur or not, the win at the end of this is where you get this to a place where you're consistently hitting good numbers.
Yeah.
Or you're hitting bad numbers and you're able to make quick, responsive decisions as opposed to taking a long time to make the decision. Because everybody sees that as good leadership. Everybody can see that. Quick decisions or we're winning.
That's a really good point, the responsiveness element of this.
Yeah.
Like otherwise, being able to diagnose fast versus like something's off and we don't know what it is and now we have to go spin our wheels to try to figure it out.
Versus we've been red for 3 months.
Something's wrong and we know what's wrong. We know exactly what's wrong.
We know exactly what's wrong. So now we need to have the meeting about how to fix.
Yes.
It's now time.
And everyone should be on the same page already.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think we should try, unless you have anything else to add about scorecards, I think we should do a little audience question.
Beautiful.
So this is someone that wants to remain anonymous.
Yeah. And so they have a business, though, called Curriculums. And it has they've got a side gig, the anonymous person who's written into us, has a side gig of writing curriculum for an influencer, and they make really cool children's video series and workbooks, and there's enough interest in this to do a second version, so they're working on this now, so there's some traction happening, and they would love to do this full time. Mm. And could get there with this particular influencer who's like the first customer of this.
Yeah.
But they're curious if they could scale it, not just to that one customer, but to like other projects too. Like if museums need children's workbooks or something like that. And so they want to stay loyal to this first customer, but they're like, well, how do I figure out like if I could do like another customer or something else so that I could get this from my side gig to my full-time job faster?
Yes. So my initial thoughts are there's almost two parallel paths here, which is the loyalty piece of this is interesting because it makes me think that maybe they're considering trying to go full time. Is there a path where you could go full time with this person, where you go and scale this offering with them such that you are building out this side of their business and you become kind of a part of this influencer's business?
Mm.
Or are you thinking agency model where this influencer is a client of yours and like to the museum example, museums could be, I mean, you could have clients of any type and
or productized service model too, where like there's a set package of like you can get this kind of workbook and it's more narrow as opposed to like agency will make anything for you. So it's kind of like those are the different paths.
Yeah, productized is definitely a really good element there to add for scalability purposes of not having to be doing
but not for the beginning and starting
things.
Bespoke is real good if you're trying to like start and get high price points, so maybe it like evolves.
But I think that there's something even just in this, I mean, I know that we're talking about children's video series and like things dedicated to kids, but I do think that there is an interesting model here in the sense that you're kind of capitalizing on the influencer ecosystem or economy by recognizing that many of these people that already have these audiences want to find more interesting ways to monetize their followings and want to sell courses or workbooks or tools, but might not know how to build those out for themselves. Yep. So I actually think this is like a really interesting.
It's a great idea.
Yeah, it really is.
And I think the lens that I'm hearing the question through, and I think it's useful for me to maybe say it this way, because what I'm hearing is, should I be worried about getting my second customer?
Mm.
Because if you frame it like that, no, of course not. You should not be worried about getting your second customer. So I think, first of all, the influencer that's the first customer knows that this is a side gig. Maybe they don't know. I actually don't think it's relevant. I think sometimes we think that someone who takes a chance on you first, right? And I think that's what this person who wrote in says, like, the influencer took a chance on me. Your first customer is always going to take a chance on you. That's what a first customer is. First customers are people who are willing to try new things. They're like innovators. They're going to be early adopters. And that's how they behave. They're cool with trying new stuff, mm-hmm. right? They like that about it. And so I don't think that they necessarily have this expectation.
Right.
Sometimes we make this expectation for ourselves right. that, like, they won't think I'm loyal if I go expand my business. Like, I can't think of any agency or contractor that I've ever worked with where I, from the other end as the customer, feel like they're not loyal to me if they expand their business. Now, if they drop the ball on my project,
yeah.
now I feel that way. But, like, I actually think you should ask this person, like, have the conversation with them, pose it as, like, I really want to do and expand this in other industries, not to compete with you, but
that's
in other
exactly
spaces.
What I was going to say.
Is and like, I'd love if you'd be willing to, like, help me just quickly think through that. Like, you've been such a great first customer yeah. for me, and you've really helped me shape something that's, like, possible for me next. Because early adopters love that,
mm-hmm.
right? They love being able to be part of the helping of birthing a new thing, right? As an early adopter myself, I love that. I have people on my team, like, I encourage people on my team to have side projects, and I love helping them build yeah. those out. So I think actually you could frame it as a good question where you say, like, hey, can you help me think it through? Is there anybody you think you would could introduce me to who you think would be a good for this, provided that, like, we keep A-plus quality on what I'm working on with you? I think you go the other way.
Yeah, I think the competition aspect is the only thing that I was thinking might be a point of contention. I'm trying to project myself into this person's shoes and thinking, okay, if I was working with someone who, I'll use an example from email marketing.
Yeah.
When I had an email marketer working for me and we had a great relationship, she did an amazing job for me and I was so thrilled about it. And I had other friends both in the personal finance world yeah. and outside of the personal finance world who were like, oh, she set up all the flows for you. That's amazing. Can I get an intro? And it did not occur to me for a second that me introducing her to these other
yeah.
personal finance creators was creating competition.
No.
It's like, well, they're not competing for this. I mean, it doesn't strike me as competition. Now, in this particular example of children's workbooks, children's video series, I can see where you might have that concern, but I also kind of, I think, land in the camp of I wouldn't think that is the sole customer of someone that, unless you are my W-2 employee and
yeah.
you are now working also for a competitor who's making the exact same thing, that's a little bit different. But this is a yeah. side gig and you're helping this person. So I agree.
Yeah, here's the thing. Some dude bro is going, like, if you don't do it, some dude bro is going to say, all right, well, I'm going to start doing this and have a bunch of customers.
Yeah.
So, you know, and not be so worried about the, like, loyalty of it all because they're like, it's a business. You have multiple customers in a business.
The other piece of this that's interesting is I think I'm hyper fixating on the influencer component because that's just the world that I know, you know, yeah. how those types of relationships work and how you monetize. And, you know, that's kind of the water I am swimming in. But the example that this person threw out of museums, I was like, oh, B2B angle. Now that's really interesting because now your price points are 10x. Like
yeah.
you could potentially get way bigger fish.
I don't think the influencer cares about the museum winning either. I think that's
no, fine. Of course not.
Yeah.
They're not even in the same.
So overall, I'm hearing our advice is
go for it.
Go for it. Go start pitching actively. Go on LinkedIn and go find not one, because I think what's, like, from a mindset perspective, this person is thinking about one customer,
yeah.
and you cannot run a business with one. The worst kind of business you can have is where you have one customer.
Mm.
That one customer canceled, you're screwed.
Yeah.
So you don't want that. Right? You need multiple customers. And so you're now in diversification time. Go on LinkedIn, go find at least 100 potential customers to reach out to and start sending pitch letters.
Love it. I love too, because this reminds me of the distinction we made the other day of you think you need to be doing marketing, but what you actually need to be doing is sales.
Sales.
So what I'm hearing you say is it's time to go into sales mode.
Yeah.
You're in sales mode now and ask for the intro.
Yeah.
Like, ask this person that you already have this good relationship with who likes your work. Hey, I'm thinking about taking this full time, and, like, you've really helped me see the potential here.
Yeah, and in the realm of sales, I'm not saying go get 100 new customers and overwhelm yourself. It just takes 100
right.
outreach to get the next new customer.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, Well, I think that is a great place to call it. So that was all for this week's episode of Bossy. I hope you enjoyed the deeper dive into the scorecard thing. I know that I am going to go tweak mine like right now. So in the comments, if this inspired you or you're now thinking differently about your scorecard, let us know what metrics you think you're going to track and maybe give us, I'm kind of interested to see the drill downs too. The drill down metrics for different businesses.
Yeah, what metric you're going to track.
Yes. Cool. Thanks for watching.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.